You're listening to episode 78 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? I'm really excited to share that we're in the middle of setting up an online shop for 88 Cups of Tea. We're working hard at making sure that whatever we offer will add tremendous value to your storytelling process. We're also going to have some fun 88 Cups of Tea swag available in our online shop. But for now, we set up a temporary PayPal link for those of you who'd love to support our show and rock your 88 Cups of Tea swag. To grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug signed by yours truly, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug. Thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. On to the next part of our intro. If you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with fellow writers, or if you'd like to submit questions for future guests on the show, join me over in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. You'll also get sneak peeks of our publishing calendar for future episodes. For my craft-focused writers, there's tons of love, support, and encouragement, and some pretty awesome advice passed around in this special community of ours. I can't wait to meet you in there. Now on to our show. I'm thrilled to have Meg Cabot with us today. I recorded our interview back in October, and I've been saving it to release in our early 2017 slate of new episodes, and I couldn't be more excited to finally share her episode. Meg is one of the earliest pioneers of the young adult genre and is the number one New York Times bestselling author of books for adults, teens, and tweens, selling over 25 million copies of her nearly 80 published books. One of her most popular series she wrote, The Princess Diaries, was made into two hit movies by Disney, starring Julie Andrews, Anne Hathaway, and Mandy Moore. In today's episode, we dive right into how real-life events inspired Meg for her Princess Diaries book series, and she walks us through her newest book, The Boy Is Back. She shares tips on writing stories influenced by life events without offending family and friends, and why it's important to surround yourself with readers and critique partners that are honest with you about your writing. I can't wait for you to hear how Meg and her writing friend hold each other accountable and push each other past writing blocks. Meg also walks us through how to write unique character voices with a structure inspired by social media, and how reading multiple genres can strengthen your writing. Now let's jump right in. We have none other than Meg Cabot. How are you, Meg?
Oh my God, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
You have no idea. My sisters are the biggest fans of Princess Diaries, and I'm such a huge admirer of your work. I had no idea that you've published over 80 books. My mind is blown. For one person to do that in a lifetime is insane, but you've accomplished it, and I'm incredibly in awe. Meg, I'd love to kick it off and ask you how you fell in love with writing.
I grew up in a house where my dad was a college professor and my mom taught elementary school. We just grew up with gigantic love of reading. We always had books in the house. Both my parents loved to read. When any of the kids in my family were complaining that we were bored, my parents always just handed us a book and we're told to go read a book. When we read all the books in the house, we were told to go write a book, make up our own book, something like that. So that was something that just really stayed with me. And I always was making up books. I wrote my first book when I was 7.
Wow.
It never got published, but I mean, I loved writing and I loved reading, and I started writing fan fiction of the books that I loved and the movies that I loved too. So it's just something I've been doing my whole life.
Sounds like your parents were really supportive of you being a writer.
Well, no.
Oh, okay. Because it sounded like they were super supportive and like, okay, go make up your stories. But I guess when it came to getting a degree, it was a totally different story.
They're very realistic and knew how hard it was to make a living writing books. That while they weren't going to ever say, don't do that, they wanted me to get a job doing something that I could actually pay the rent. My dad actually really wanted me to be a professor or a teacher, something where you always had a steady income and then could write on the side. They were very realistic. Whatever their kids wanted to do. And I think both me and my brothers, we all wanted to do something either artistic. One of my brothers wanted to be a basketball player.
And oh my God, that's great, awesome.
But why don't you develop a skill that you can fall back on when, you know, you get an injury. So we all did. We all studied something in school. He actually did go to college on a basketball scholarship, but he studied criminal justice and he's also a police sergeant. My other brother wanted to be a dancer and I wanted to be either a writer or an actress or an artist. I wasn't sure, but they made sure that we all studied stuff we could support ourselves doing just in case.
You know what I find fascinating is that all of you have some type of artsy genetics in you or something that bit you that's very creative. Your parents, do they do anything creative on the side as a hobby?
One of my brothers is adopted. So I think some of it was kind of the environment that we were raised in. My mom loves to write and she's very artistic. My dad actually loves sports. He was a business professor. He taught business. So I think he was a little shocked at what was going on. He also loved sports. So I think that some of that rubbed off on my other brother.
That must have been so much fun growing up with your siblings. Everyone's into something. Did you guys put up plays or anything during family holidays?
Thank God, no. My brother, who was into dancing and musical theater, we were in plays a lot. My parents were very supportive and went to all of them. And my one brother, who was into sports, we were forced to go to his sporting events. So they're very supportive of everything that we did, except for the part where they were very strict about you have to do well in school and you have to try to study something that eventually you'll be able to support. And I'm so glad that they said that because my mom made me actually take typing in high school, typing class, administrative assistant stuff. She said, you're never going to be a waitress. You're terrible at cleaning after people, but you could always be an administrative assistant for somebody because you could type really fast, which is something that I learned in that class. And I did. That's actually how I supported myself after I got out of college because I ended up studying art and I could not get an art job to save my life. But I got a job as an administrative assistant in a 700-bed freshman dormitory. And it was a great job because it was stress-free and I could come home at night and during the weekends and vacations and stuff, I could work on my novels, which is what I did.
Okay, so you started writing, about how old were you? Because to write over 80 novels, that's insane.
Those are just the ones that got published. I've been writing all along. And then finally, after I got published, then I was able to give them the ones that I'd been writing for years and try to get them published too. So I'd been writing books since I was 7. So I had a lot of books stored up. Once I finally did get an agent and then I got published, I did start handing them books that I'd written. I started writing actual books towards the idea of getting published when I was pretty much in high school and college.
That's freaking awesome. I think that's so cool. Yeah. And I'm just mind boggled because how did you know at such an early age about structure and characters and voices and plot and all that stuff?
I read tons of books. I love to read all different kinds of books. I read sci-fi and mystery and romance, every kind of genre novel that I could get my hands on. I also read books on how to write. There are tons of books that are written by authors on how to write. Some of my favorites are Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird and Stephen Kahn Writing. Those are very helpful. And then I took creative writing workshops too and submitted my work to other people for them to critique and either took their advice or not. Some of them were not very helpful, but some of them were really helpful. And so that really helped. And then when I felt ready to start trying to send stuff out to see if I could get it published, of course, I got many rejections, but some of the rejections were actually helpful too. So I took their advice and tried to figure out my voice that I felt was the most likable because I wrote many different kinds of stories that people did not like for a while. Like I was trying to write mysteries. The one that I worked the hardest on that never got published was about a high school basketball coach who solved crimes.
Fired by your brothers.
Yeah, it's a whole series about this guy. I don't even know why I kept writing on my 4 or 5 of them and nobody wanted to publish them. They're good, but do you even know anything about basketball? Which I did kind of, but
you crack me up.
So yeah, those never got published, but I kept working on different things until I finally found something that hit. So I still have those if anybody wants to publish them. The film rights are available too.
Starring your brother.
Yeah.
I know that you actually moved around a lot growing up. You lived quite a few places like France and California, New York. Living in these beautiful places, have any of them affected your work or the experiences that you had growing up in those places? Did it affect or influence any of your writing?
In particular, living in Carmel, California, where we moved because my dad got a temporary assignment teaching actually at the Naval Academy in Carmel, California, I ended up writing a whole series of books called the Mediator series, which is about a girl who ends up moving to Carmel with her mother because she's remarried. And she, of course, this girl has the ability to see and speak to ghosts. So I ended up writing this story way back in the late 90s, certainly before Ghost Whisperer and The Sixth Sense and all of that. And I wrote it and I set it in Carmel because that was such a beautiful place and it was kind of eerily spooky in a way. I went to school in one of the old California missions, kind of inspired me to write about the old spirits that haunt those places. The Indians were not treated that well there.
I'm superstitious. And in your bio, you mentioned that you're a fire horse. And I'm like, I love her. She knows about my people's zodiac signs. I'm a fire rabbit. So I do want to know, it seems like you might be open to these kinds of things. Did you see anything? Did anything ever happen that you witnessed yourself?
We did go up to San Francisco while we were there to go to the Chinese New Year festival and stuff. That's how I found out about the Chinese astrology. When I worked in the dorm, because I worked in the New York University dorms for 10 years, and that's a lot of people that you end up moving in and out of a building quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So there's 700 kids living in a building, and every year it changes the population. That you do actually end up having a certain amount of student deaths. And
oh.
It's kind of, so we did have a lot of kids who would come down and report that they'd had a haunting or they'd seen something and they wanted to paint. Yeah. Oh, no. So there were some things that could not be explained logically, even though some of them could.
And oh, my God, I have goosebumps everywhere.
No, I mean, that really was kind of what inspired the book series of The Mediator, because sometimes I would think that the kids were maybe too stressed from finals. And so I would send them over to student health services to maybe see the psych counselors. Psych counselors would send them back and be like, no, there's nothing wrong with them. They really are truly convinced they saw something, and we can't say that they didn't. And
oh,
it's your
God. But I believe in that stuff. So that freaks me.
I came away convinced that there's definitely something out there and there were certain rooms in that building that it happened every year. And we wouldn't tell them because we weren't allowed to tell them that, yes, somebody had died in that room the year before.
God.
And there was no way they could have known because we kept it completely quiet.
That is crazy, because one of my best friends went to NYU and she stayed in one of the dorms. So I don't even know if that was the building she stayed in.
Yeah, you have to imagine in New York, the buildings too are very old. They've been around for usually a couple hundred years. So
yes.
Of course, people have died probably in every room. There are certain people who are sensitive to that kind of thing. And if they come down and say that they're feeling something, they probably are.
Yeah.
There's definitely a reason. We never had anybody have something bad happen to them because of it, but they'd say my door keeps slamming shut for no reason.
I'm so scared of these things.
But you don't need to be scared. They just wanted somebody to acknowledge. Well, we felt like they just wanted to be acknowledged.
Oh.
And we're like, just tell them, you know, they're there. And usually it would go away.
You're so nice. I would be like, hell no. I would run the hell out of that building.
I wrote another series, the Heather Wells mystery series, that actually was set in the dorms, and it doesn't have any ghosts. It does actually have real criminals, like murderers. So you'll probably be better off reading those.
I think I'll stick to Heather Wells.
Yeah, exactly. Acknowledge and then go with it.
It is so true. I hear that too from one of my friends who can see these things, and she's like, just say, I acknowledge, or if you're feeling nervous or scared, just say, please leave. Thank you. And you don't have to make a big scene out of it, because then it's going to attract more things. I'm like, okay, girl, I'll just scream inside. It's okay.
Stick with her.
I know. As I'm passing out, she's dragging my body out the door to try to save me. So let's jump right back in. So now we know where Mediator and Heather Wells series are inspired from. What about other locations? Were there any other fun stories? How about France? I mean, you were in Grenoble, was it?
We were in Grenoble, and my parents, I can't believe they did this, but they took us as little kids all around Europe. And one of the places we visited was Monaco, the country of Monaco, the tiny principality. And that was really the inspiration for the country of Genovia, which is the setting for The Princess Diaries.
Do you remember that lightning moment where, oh my God, an idea just slapped me upside the head. I have to write about Mia, this girl, and this is her background. This is her story. Do you remember that exact moment? Were you standing somewhere? Were you having chai tea or something?
What happened was my dad had passed away and it had been a
couple
years.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I know. It happened when I was pretty young. I was 26. And kind of suddenly, my mom started dating again.
Ooh.
And she started dating one of my teachers. That was really weird because, you know, you don't want to think about your mom with one of your teachers because it's just,
yeah.
I started writing about that. Even though I was happy for her, and they're still together. It's just ugh, it's disgusting, but nice. I started writing about it and I gave it to my friends to read because I thought it would be a funny book. And they're like, this is weird. The girl's 30 years old and why is she so upset about, you know, her mom going out with her teacher? So I was like, ugh, you guys are crazy, but I'll make her younger. So I made her about 14. And then my friends still were like, this story's boring. Like nothing is happening. So I said, oh, fine. I'll just make her into a princess. Would you like that? Would actually be really fun. So I did. And then, of course, I had to make her a princess of some country. And I remembered back to visiting Monaco, where the people were so nice to us because my brother's biracial. So we were traveling with this adopted biracial little baby. And they were so excited. They hadn't seen that so much in those days in the early 70s. And they were so nice to us. And they actually let us into the Palace Museum because they had just received the moon rocks from Nixon, was president at the time. And he had given them a gift of moon rocks. And they were so excited to meet any Americans. And they're like, oh, look what your president gave us. And I just thought, oh, I'll base it on Monaco because they were always so nice to us.
America needs to follow suit, P.S.
I know.
What a great country. Okay, so that's how your story started for Princess Diaries. That's crazy. Was that one of your books that hit most close to home?
Definitely. When my mom read it, she was like, you need to change some things.
You're like, nope, it's my story, not yours. You already rewrote our story.
So she's like, you got the teacher based a little too closely on my boyfriend.
It's like, revenge is sweet, mama. Thank you. Yeah, wow, that's really cool to see how something that really dug at you emotionally, you're able to turn that into such a successful book series. Number one, that was a great outlet for you. Yeah. And number two, boom. And also, I have to note that your friends are awesome for being there for you. You have a lot to thank your friends for. Like, yeah, they sound like they are people who don't take any crap from anyone. They're, you know, tell it like it is. And everyone needs those kind of people in their circle and just tell them the truth. That is cool. Were they your friends overall who had experience critiquing before?
They're just readers. They're not writers. They're still my number one friends that I go to for everything. But when I write, they're the first people who read everything I write. And they are totally honest, which is why I love them. They're too honest, actually. And they tell me exactly how they feel. And I know if it's boring or if it's whatever, they tell me exactly what I need to do. And the thing that's great about that is that I wrote a book that was an outlet for me, but everybody still in my family likes me because I think it's really important when I think sometimes when you see these authors who write memoirs that are totally letting their emotions out and stuff, you do have to be careful not to upset the people in your family. Unless they've been totally, totally horrible to you, they're still the most important people in your lives for the most part, unless they really were horrible. And I always say family is more important than books. So, but it's great to have a lot of books published, but you still want to have your friends still like you afterwards so you don't alienate them. That's an important thing. And with Princess Diaries, it's a happy story and she does eventually get along with her mom and her teacher.
Exactly.
Which I did as well. So it's an important thing to keep in mind if you're a writer.
I do love that you mentioned that because there's a lot of listeners who actually are writing fiction, but very closely related to their own stories. I fall in that category too, where I do feel, is it my job to tell the story as truthfully as possible, knowing that it could hurt people, or do I honor loyalties to the ones who are in my life? It's nice to hear that from you. It just came at the perfect timing.
It's a fine line too, because I also believe in writing for revenge. I think that's one of the best reasons to be a writer is to get revenge on people. You want to be careful that it's for the right reasons and that the person that you're getting the revenge on is not going to come back and sue you, because that can happen too. I love Star Wars, so I always think about the Force and also the movie The Craft. I love that movie too, that you send out into the universe does come back at you times three. So you don't want to be sending stuff out there that's completely horrible and vicious, because that could come back at you. So you got to be careful and think about the balance of everything.
It's funny that you're talking about how we just found out that your friends are not actual writers, but they do read. And that's something that I was actually wondering for the listeners. Do you go out and find critiquing partners or reading partners in your writing workshop? But I guess you answered it where you don't have to, as long as I guess whoever's reading it has somewhat of a good idea of what good stories are, and it's getting their opinion. So it's not necessarily that you need to go to a writing workshop or a writing school in order to find the perfect partner to read your work and give you some feedback.
It takes some experimentation. Early on, I had some people reading for me who turned out to be kind of not so great, and the stuff that they were picking on was maybe not as important. I realized I'd made a mistake. But so it takes a while to find good readers. You can find them anywhere. You can find them in critique group. They can turn out just to be friends who read a lot. And I do have some writer friends that help out as well. So we read each other's stuff and give advice. But usually that comes more after the editing process with editors if there's a really tight spot that we can't decide about. But it's really just experimentation and finding people who give you really helpful advice.
I love that. And now, Meg, I know that you have The Boy Is Back.
Oh, my new book.
Yes, your newest book. How are you feeling about it?
It's funny that we talked about writing about people who you know in the book because I accidentally used the name of someone I went to high school with in the book. She actually, in the book, is called The Biggest, B-I-T-C-H. She is not. I totally forgot that she is the real person that I went to high school with. And I thought I'd made this great name up. I was like, oh, this is the best name. And then when I went back to my town for the first stop on my book tour, some people from my high school came and they're like, do you realize what you did and what you said about it? Summer Walters is her name, which is a great name, Summer Walters.
We're talking about full name.
Full name, Summer Walters. Oh, and it's such a great name. And I was like, oh, I think it's only great because now I realize it's because I've heard it so many times because I know her. And so they're like, what you said about Summer? And I was like, oh my gosh, you have to be really careful when you're writing.
So what the hell do you do in those cases?
I got back from my book tour, so obviously I have to write Summer a big note and send her the book and be like, I'm so sorry. Fortunately, she thinks it's funny. She's got a good sense of humor. But yeah, so you got to be really careful. I was so mortified. Tell everybody when you buy this book, just remember, Summer is not really that way at all. But yes, it's about a guy who goes back to his small hometown after many years, just like I did for the book tour, and then immediately runs into all these people that he knows from high school. And they're like, guess what? Only in my case, when I went back, they're like, guess what you did in your book, you big dummy.
This is the first time this has ever happened, like the full first and last name?
Yeah, I will put somebody's name that I know in the book as a placeholder until I think of a better name.
Mm.
And then, yeah, forgotten. That has happened a few times too. I need to go back and change it and I've totally forgotten. So that has happened. This is the first time that I literally forgot that this is a real person's name. Oh my God, I'm so
You know what? I gotta give it to you. That is pretty damn good though. Just one out of a track record of over 80 books. Come on. We can give her a break. I think that's pretty impressive. For me, I probably would have had 75 mistakes and then like 75 books.
Yeah, like out of 80 books, I think that's pretty good.
So this book, it's inspired by something that actually happened, right?
Yes. Well, I love reading the crime report in small town papers. So this is inspired by a true crime, but it's not really a crime, but something that happened with an elderly couple who went into a restaurant and they tried to pay for a meal with a postage stamp that they thought was worth all this money, but it turns out it was not. And so they were arrested for fraud.
Oh my God.
And then the town becomes divided over whether or not they had maybe early senior dementia or whether they were really trying to get a free meal out of this local restaurant. And that turns out that those are this guy's parents. And that's why he has to go back to the small town to help deal with his parents who maybe on borderline senior dementia, or they may just be a little eccentric. And of course, he has siblings and everybody's on a different side about the situation. And of course, who does he run into in his small town but his ex-girlfriend from high school? And there may still be some feelings there. And oh, of course, he also runs into Summer Walters. B-I-T-C-H in town.
Oh my God, I love that. That is freaking amazing. Your story was so awesome. And just the way you wrote it too. Do you mind giving a snapshot for listeners who may not have checked out your book yet? And I'm specifically also talking about text messages and emails.
The whole story is told from the beginning. Well, it starts with the newspaper article, a little crime report. And then it goes from Summer Walters. It goes to Summer Walters Facebooking to everyone in the world about how these, you know, prestigious couple in the town have been arrested. And then everyone's emailing back and forth and texting back and forth about how this horrible thing has happened, and eventually gets to the siblings. And it also gets to the ex-girlfriend, who happens to be a senior moving expert. She's somebody who helps people who are in need, who want to move or downsize in their homes. And everyone in the whole town is talking. So it's all told in emails and text, Skype chats, and actually journal entries, and even some Amazon reviews.
That caught my attention because I've never seen the Amazon reviews ever before in a book. And just overall, even Skype chatting and starting off with a newspaper clipping. That was brilliant. Where on earth did you have that idea?
I kind of wanted it to be about how you know, everybody complains that social media and stuff is kind of driving families apart, and how the people will sit at the dinner table and text and they don't talk to each other. And in this particular case, for this family, it was true. They really hadn't, you know, they weren't paying attention to each other. They didn't even know what was happening with their own parents. But by the end of the book, all of that social media has brought them closer together. And so I do feel that in some ways, technology has brought us closer together. And I kind of wanted to show that with this book, how ultimately we find out all this stuff about these people, and we find it out through their social media contact. I thought that would be an interesting way to do it, because I feel like that's kind of happened with my family. Although the fact that my brother showed up this morning 9 a.m. and I totally had a breakdown in communication. But, you know, he's here now, so it's fine. I've actually done this before. I have a couple other books that I've done totally through texting and emails, and all of them have the word boy in the title.
Was this your first one with Amazon, though, right?
This is definitely the first one with Amazon. It's not that I would ever go on Amazon, because I would never do that. But sometimes I do, like, when I'm on Amazon, I look at other reviews, and I think it's interesting how you can click on the person who's reviewing it and go through their reviews and find out stuff about their life and what's going on. And I've done that a couple times, and I kind of wanted to do a story where you could go through somebody's Amazon reviews and find out stuff about their life, which is what happens in this book as well.
That is so awesome. That would actually really be really cool. Transition that over, or borrow that over into your mystery crime thrillers too in the future, because
that's a good idea.
That's such a great way of finding out snippets of people without them even realizing. Was it challenging writing in that setup? I'm just imagining, if I were in your shoes, the way I would do it is write it out like an actual story, like a traditional way, and then piece it together through the technology, the different technology and the reviews, the Amazon review and the Skype calls. How was it for you? Was it difficult and challenging?
It is a fun challenge. And that's why I wanted to do it, because it is more difficult than telling it as a traditional story where it would have been just expository. And that's why I enjoy doing it. And that's why I wanted to do it. And I didn't do it the way that I probably should have, the way you suggested doing it. I just sat down and started doing it, and I wrote the emails at different points and then kind of put them all together. I just kind of had them on different computers around the house. I thought it was like putting a puzzle together, and it was fun.
I was thinking of a puzzle when we were like talking about this.
You kind of have to do it that way, though, because you want all the voices to be very different so that they stand out reader, because there's so many different characters. But I do think in the end it kind of works.
That seemed like it was more exciting and fun. Did you have something that you came across while writing The Boy Is Back where it was really, oh my gosh, I can't get past this?
Oh, every book has that.
Yeah, you're human.
Yeah, and the number one question that I get is about writer's block. I know that every single writer that I know gets that at least a little bit. And I actually have a writer friend and I who have a thing that we use to get through that. And so it's Rachel Vale, who's a good writer friend of mine, and she writes picture books and middle grade and YA books. And we write together every day. And what we do is we have a thing when we get blocked, and it's called 5-5 or 5. So we have to write 5 pages of our book by 5 o'clock, or we have to donate $5 to the political candidate that we hate the most.
Oh my God, I love you guys. You guys are the best.
Yeah, it's really motivational, because your name is made public when you donate. We've been doing this for years, the early 2000s. And it doesn't matter who it is. It's just someone that you hate the most. And it doesn't have to be like a presidential candidate. It can just be someone just very despicable in any state. And it really motivates you. By 4:30, we start getting anything onto the page that we can. It's really good. Even if you're really blocked, you can, and it doesn't have to be for that story. It makes you write.
Well, how did that come out?
She started it.
I could totally see you finger pointing right now. It was her fault.
It's really bad. Although for this election, she keeps trying to change it that we have to run up and down the stairs 5 times. She so does not want to donate to the particular candidate that we've chosen. But I'm like, no, I'm making her stick to it. I really recommend it.
I think it would really work. I think that's brilliant. And I think I might adopt that. That was brilliant. That was so brilliant. And I feel like that's going to really light a fire under so many butts that are listening. So thank you for that. That's
you will never have writer's block again.
I know, seriously. And when you were saying you guys write together, I'm assuming that you mean separate in your own privacies, like in your homes. And do you guys ever meet up for coffee dates, hash it out with your laptops, or it's all in your home?
Well, she lives in New York and I live in Florida. But when I'm up in New York, and she's come down to Florida too, we sit around. Mostly we drink alcohol.
Wine is the best. I love that you have a writer best friend in this writing world. That's really cute.
We met at a writer's conference. And so when you go to those, but I mean, mostly we talk online.
I'm definitely one who's always encouraging people, like when they're asking for critiques and stuff like that, whether they're asking for feedback from family members, I'm just like, okay, please leave it to the workshops, go to a conference. Are there any that you love, that you've had your own personal experiences where you're like, wow, that was so great for me and I really learned a lot, or I got what I needed from that conference and or writing workshop? Are there any that you can share with us?
I think that it depends on what you're writing. If you are writing genre fiction, really try to go to the genre fiction conferences. Like if you're writing mysteries, then you want to go to the mystery writing conventions, Boucheron. If you're writing romance, I highly recommend the Romance Writers of America. If there's a chapter in your town, I would join that. But I mean, I'd really stick to what the genre that you're in. I also really recommend if there's a community college or something in your neighborhood that continuing ed, they usually have really great writing workshops and they're usually taught by really great writers. And that was where I felt like I had the best experience when I worked at NYU. Believe it or not, I did continuing ed writing workshops and they were taught by just the best. And whatever, I think they were like eight week workshops. I just had the best teacher there. Joyce Hackett was her name. And so you turn in whatever, I can't. But what it really taught more than anything was how to meet a deadline and also how to accept criticism and just realize that everything you do is not a beautiful diamond. It just comes out perfect. And then how to take it. And then also the teachers were just so supportive. They also, if your community has things like where an agent comes to a bookstore and offers some kind of advice, that was always really helpful. Things in your community. And most of them were free. Except for that, obviously, you had to pay for the continuing ed workshop. But yeah, I mean, just take advantage of that. And of course, joining the romance writing and the mystery conventions, those kind of things, they do cost money. I wouldn't recommend spending a lot of money because I think that they shouldn't really cost that much. But yeah, I think that was so helpful for me.
Thank you so much for that. That's very helpful for us too, to hear that. I am very curious. How long does it take you to write each story?
I mean, there were periods when I had contracts in certain years when I did only have a month and it was crazy.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, when I first got a bunch of contracts and I really was trying to get out there and make a name for myself, I had a schedule that was crazy like that. So 2 or 3 months. But now that's not ideal. And obviously, if you have an idea, I like to think about the idea that for the book that I have for at least a year before I start writing it, I want to make sure that it's really something that's a keeper and that I want to have. Because, you know, you want to make sure that it works. It does take me at least a year to let it gel. And then once I start writing, though, I do write really fast. And so it's at least 3 or 4 months to get the first draft done. And then you turn it in and the editor messes around with it for a while. And then when the editor gives it back to you, you usually have less than a month to get that next revision back. It's fast. Frustrating is then it's a year before you see it again. It's a strange business.
I'm just in shock because this is the first time I heard where your contract stated 2 months for your book to be finished. I just assumed from most people's experiences that you authors usually have a year for a contract to finish a book.
No, for a revision.
Oh, for a revision. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I enjoy the crash it really fast. For some reason that works for me.
I guess you work really well under pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a favorite book that's most close to your heart out of your books?
I like all my books the same. You kind of have to. Also, you kind of have to like the book you're working on right now. And because it takes so much energy to finish a book, if you don't like the one you're working on at the moment, you'll never finish it. And then as soon as you're done with that one, you like the next one the best. It tends to be how it goes. So right now, I love The Boy Is Back so much. But as soon as I start the next one, I love that one the best.
Amazing. Well, listeners will have to check out your current book, The Boy Is Back, and also have to check out the Amazon reviews and how Meg incorporated it. It's brilliant. And now, do you have any parting advice for our listeners who are aspiring writers, whether it's from querying letters to agents to, well, you did suggest an amazing way of not having writer's block, but is there anything else that you can advise to our listeners?
I think it's just really important to not give up. If it's something that you really love doing, just keep doing it and don't listen to what other people say. I mean, unless they're offering kind of advice that you find helpful. My husband gave me really good advice when I was getting tons of rejections, which happened. He's like, I love golf and people tell me that I'm a terrible golfer, but I love doing it. So I'm going to keep doing it. And I was really down when I was getting all those bad rejections, and I realized, yeah, it's true. I love writing. So if people are telling me that I'm terrible at it, I don't care what they say. I'm going to keep doing it no matter what. And I think if it's something that you don't like doing that much, then don't feel obligated to keep doing it. I think quitting is really important, because if we don't quit doing stuff that we're not getting that much out of, then we never have time to start concentrating and finding the things that we really want to do. So I quit so many things, ballet and softball and acting. And I'm glad I quit those things, because it gave me time to concentrate on the thing I really love doing, which is writing. I kind of hate that quitters never win thing. Quitters do win.
That's true.
The time to do what they want to do, which for me was writing. So,
and that wraps up our episode with Meg Cabot. Meg, I had such a great time chatting with you on the show. Storytellers, thank you for listening in and joining us as always. Please say hi to Meg on Twitter at Meg Cabot. Meg recommended awesome resources for you to check out, and we have all the resources linked in her show notes page over at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Meg Cabot. If you'd love to support our show by rocking your 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug signed by yours truly. Thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. Don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other awesome writers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we also post sneak peeks of future episodes. Join me over in our new Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, advice, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to meet you in there.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.